So it was made out in California, is that right?
Absolutely, sure.
And Griffith was a producer on it, yes?
Yeah, it was Griffith's company. It's difficult to say how much day-to-day he had with the production, but it was his company, so.
Yeah, so.
I guess he had some influence on it.
Yeah. And is this right, though, that it is, I mean, because there was that 1911 film that no longer survives, is this pretty much the oldest surviving feature film length about the
album? Yeah, there was one made in 1913, which was feature length, called Siege and Fall of the Alamo, which was made in San Antonio. And, of course, The Immortal Alamo was not feature length. It was one reel. That was 1911. So, this is it. This is the only one from, and except for parts, you know, the remaining footage from With Davy Crockett at the Fall of the Alamo from 1926, this is the only other silent Alamo film that survives.
Okay. So, in what do you remember? Because I was able to watch about half of it. You know, I'd kind of watch the beginning of it and then the end. I mean, like, how do you rank it in terms of, entertainment value? First of all, let's not even get into historical accuracy at the moment.
Yeah, that would be pointless.
Yeah, yeah, but what about the entertainment value of it?
I like it. I mean, it does have this real antipathy toward the Mexican army, and it does imply that the Texas Revolution came about because Mexicans were rude to white women. And so there is, you know, I guess that's why people always assumed that Griffith had a lot more to do with it, because it's the same year as Birth of a Nation, and it has the same racial sensitivity that Birth of a Nation has.
Yeah, there's these shots in the Alamo film of they're like accosting the women in the streets and stuff. And
And this just riles up the Americans who are there. You know, none of the movies ever really deal with the fact that the whole reality of the settlers who came to Texas and what they were and why they were there and all that. It's always just Americans who need to fight for freedom while they're there. And there's just that. And and it doesn't give any other context to the battle, which, you know.
But it's go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say, but it was still at a time when audiences would be apt to know what the Alamo was. And so you wouldn't need to have put that much more explanation to it because they knew.
But it's
I was watching a Griffith film, America, not too long ago, and it's about the Revolutionary War from 1924, I guess. And you know, there'll be a scene, just the title will come up that just says Bunker Hill. And then it goes to, you know, and starts showing all the battle and everything. And I was thinking at the time, you couldn't do that now. Because if you just said Bunker Hill, 3/4 of the audience or more would go, what's that?
Yeah.
And same thing with Martyrs of the Alamo, and indeed with all the early Alamo films. It still came at a time when the majority of Americans knew what their history was. And so they didn't need to go into that much detail, and wouldn't have even if they could, because the story of the Alamo in movies is always way different than the reality of the Alamo. So as a matter of fact, you know, until the 2004 film, and to some extent, the IMAX film, no filmmakers had ever even given it a second thought in terms of making it historically authentic.
Yeah.
Not that even when they tried, did they succeed all that well, but before that, nobody ever even tried. They just didn't, you know, John Wayne's film absolutely nothing about what was about what it was about. You know? Santana was going to come up and stop everybody from being free, and then all they had to do was get in the Alamo and try to stay free. That's pretty much it. Yeah.
Well, I thought it was pretty interesting that this picture, even this early on, even goes past the Alamo into the victory over Santa Ana at San Jacinto, some weeks later.
Yeah, that was for nearly all of the silent films, that was always a thing because, you know, clearly, if you don't, then you're just left with the end of a movie where everybody's dead, the end. And so San Jacinto kind of brings a happy ending out of it in a way, or at least what they hoped was an inspiring, more uplifting ending than just showing hundreds of corpses. So, this one has... Sam Houston is a fairly major character in this film, and I think, the Alamo is probably done three quarters of the way through the through the film.
That's right.
And it goes on, with Houston and with the stand-in for Deaf Smith, more politely called Silent Smith.
Yeah.
I think that's why they did it. They wanted to, I think to those people, the Alamo only meant something if victory came from defeat. And so for so much of popular culture, the Alamo was really only the first part of the story. And San Jacinto was the denouement, was the way they pulled meaning out of the tragedy. And that's, the Immortal Alamo is that way, and this is that way. Siege and Fall, kind of. That's the one, boy, I really wish I could have seen that one, because they used the real Alamo for the Alamo, built a palisade next to it and everything. But I think that's what they were always up to, and
well, why is it
this
then,
one has? Oh, go ahead.
I was just saying, well, why is it that you think then that, like, throughout in popular culture, that so much emphasis got placed on the Alamo and that battle itself? When you're right, in Hollywood, we tend to want happy endings and resolution. That, why is it that the Alamo became the big to do, the big focus then, rather than providing a resolution all the time in most all depictions?
I think people have always believed that the Alamo was the bigger show of heroism. And again, this betrays not a lot of understanding of the historical record, but they believe that, this is still the cliche, and I've stopped debating people about it. It's just not worth it. But, it's still, people will say, yeah, they went in there knowing they were going to give their lives for liberty, and they didn't leave when they could have left, and they stood to the last man, So that's very attractive. Last stand stories are always very attractive for Hollywood. The people who will not give up on their belief, no matter what it costs them, even if it costs them their own lives.
Yeah.
And so that's what they always position the Alamo story as being. It's always interesting to me when they make movies about the Alamo in which there is no San Jacinto, that it just stops. John Wayne's film, it ends literally as the few survivors are leaving the carnage. The end.
That's right.
It's like they don't even hint at San Jacinto. To be fair, at the time, John Wayne was talking about making a sequel about Sam Houston. And so maybe in his mind he was thinking, well, you end this like this, and then the next movie, it starts up. you know, the next day and goes on or something. But you know, even John Hancock's version goes to San Jacinto as well as a way to bring the story to a close, although, because it's also the first one to really show the incredible savagery of that battle, it doesn't come off as being a victorious lap at all. It just comes off as being, well, you were terrible to us at the Alamo, and that will be terrible to you here. So you just turn about as fair play.
Yeah.
And it doesn't come off as being an inspiring, this is how Texas was born, which is how mostly pop culture versions of the Alamo have positioned it.
Yeah. Do you have any idea kind of what, historically, what this movie did in terms, 100 years ago, in terms of, you know, public reaction to it at all?
It got pretty solid reviews. I don't have any access. They didn't do so much of that kind of stuff in 1915 of telling you, you know, how it did at the box office and all that. And I've never seen any of the Triangle or Fine Arts financial records. So I really don't know if it did well. I know it got very respectful reviews, but mostly because I think the reviewers were just responding to the fact that they had done a historical subject. And as they always did, you know, the filmmakers claimed that they had researched and researched and researched, and this is going to show you a page of history exactly as it went down, you know, in its origins. And I think a lot of viewers believed it. I think, you know, it's really interesting to me. You know, Clara Driscoll put out a blurb about Heroes of the Alamo, which is horrible. Terrible film and absolutely inauthentic in every possible way it can be. And Clara Driscoll, the savior of the Alamo, goes out in public and says, boy, this really tells it just like it was. It's amazing to see. So, you know, you just don't know how people viewed this kind of stuff. But they seem to have reacted respectfully to this, whether it got audiences enthusiastic, I have no idea. On the other hand, it doesn't really show a siege at all. It's simply the Mexicans start attacking the Alamo and then just keep going until they get inside.
Yeah.
So we don't really know how long this battle is going on, but it seems to just being pitched battle for day after day. And so in that respect, there's plenty of action and, you know, a pretty big cast and lots of extras and a really cool-looking Alamo, completely inauthentic, really neat-looking one, you know. So are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here, yeah.
Okay, I'm getting another call.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Didn't know if it was interrupting this.
Yeah.
I'll let, you know, my message will get it. So, you know, just in terms of its physical look, I think it's a beautiful-looking film. I love the, you know, San Antonio does look like a Mexican town in it, mm-hmm. as opposed to every other movie when it's just a Wild West town. And I'm accepting, of course, the 2004 film, which had an incredibly authentic set. But this one, the town looks nice, and the Alamo doesn't look anything like the real Alamo, then or now, but it's really neat looking. It's one of my very favorite movie Alamos. And, of course, virtually every single man in the whole fort is wearing buckskin and coonskin caps. And that, when I hope that we have come to the day when we realize that not one single man in that entire fort was dressed like that. But at that time, that was the go-to look. So Griffith and William Christie Cabinet gave them what they expected, I guess.
Yeah.
Even Travis wears a coonskin cap. That's the only time that happens in the history of the movies.
Wow. So what is it about, or I guess from a film historical aspect again, too, you know, why did this movie survive? How did it, you know, how are we still able to see it today? What is the history of how it actually stayed around?
This is one of those that I can answer very specifically because I know. In the mid-70s, a guy found the print in his basement. And it's been a long time since I've read the newspaper reports, but I have them in my files somewhere. But I believe it was his grandfather who had been a traveling showman who would go around and set up screens and show movies in places that didn't necessarily have movie theaters.
Mm-hmm.
And since he would travel around Texas, he had this print, and I think he showed it well into the 20s and maybe even into the 30s. And then packed it away, and it was in the basement, and the guy just found it there. And then I believe that he sent it, I could be wrong, but I believe he sent it, or the Museum of Modern Art eventually got it and preserved it. And it was in good shape because I rented a 16-millimeter print of it 30 years ago or more,
mm-hmm,
from MoMA, if I'm not mistaken. My memory goes on some of those kind of things. But, you know, it was a nice-looking print. And then when I released it on video several years ago, we found a similar print. It was a 16-millimeter print, and it was in really good shape. Visually, it looked very good, and, you know, almost no splices or scratches or anything. Just it survived in remarkably fine shape.
Wow.
We hope that I could see a 35-millimeter print of it sometime, but I'm not quite sure where it is. I'm 90% sure it's at Museum of Modern Art.
That they have one?
Yeah.
Wow.
But I'm pretty sure that's... I think it went to the University of Texas first, and then they got it restored, or at least preserved.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't be surprised if UT has a 35 print too, but I don't know that they do.
Yeah.
So don't quote me.
Okay. Well, cool, man. No, thanks so much. This has been great information, Frank. I really appreciate it.
Well, my pleasure.